Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Revolution Radio. This is Dr. Kate, and I'm glad that you're here this evening. Those of you who will be listening later, thank you very much. I know this is a very popular time for radio shows on a Wednesday night, so I'm grateful for anyone who goes ahead and joins us, listens. This evening, let me start off again. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And I'm sure you can see that what is going on in our country right now is we are being pushed and pushed and pushed to the edge. The unbelievable Alinsky tactics that are being used on us right now, the healthcare vote, do they have the votes? Do they not? Is the vote all a sham because they're going to do it anyway by executive order? Excuse me, just a second. Getting over a little cough there. The jobs bill and the renewed interest in prosecuting the CIA and failure again in Afghanistan, and the trillions of dollars that are being printed daily to increase the debt and reduce the value of our resources, of our dollar. It's unbelievable. And the Articles of Freedom, as you know, the Continental Congress 2009, actually formally the Third Continental Congress in our history, took a hard look at these issues and really believe that it's time to take this government back. I know everybody does as well, but we are facing a time of increased stress. So the last thing we need is for anyone to kind of go off the edge on their own here. And although there are going to be those that do that, it's already happening. But we need to stand together, keep your powder dry, as they say. Don't fire till you see the white of their eyes. And later on in the show, I want to talk about some ideas. In any case, tonight we were supposed to talk about the Patriot Papers, and I was hoping my colleague and friend would be joining us, one of the authors of that, but instead she may be quite busy. So what we'll probably do is read from some of those Patriot Papers, and I'll let you know about them and certainly invite her back. I also would like to talk with you about yet another attack on our country and on our resources, which is designed, in my view, to just make us get to the boiling point. But I hope and I pray that we're going to be able to do this properly. But I'd like to talk about the federal takeover of fisheries and read a little article there from that. And then finally, this evening, since we do not have any guests who show up or anything in the chat room, I am going to play episode 2 of Paradigm Shift from Jeff Williams, commonsensejeff.com. And he is a delegate from Washington State, wrote the Declaration and resolves of the Continental Congress, a great friend, a terrific person, and quite a talented individual. And this is a very good show. It'll be on the Second Amendment, also on Tenth Amendment issues. And he has produced another show that's coming up, so we will play that. So let me start off, first of all, with this federal takeover of fisheries. I didn't know if you knew about this, but this is from the Beaufort Observer, Louisiana, I think, March 10th, 2010. Here we go. The author is, it's News and Commentary. I'll find the author later. Here we go. Federal takeover of fisheries. It looks like we're in for another federal power grab. This time, those of us who like to boat and fish appear to be the victims of this effort to expand the federal bureaucracy's control over coastal waters to include what some fear would be federal control over recreational and commercial fisheries in our coastal waters and even inland water if they think that what goes on upstream impacts the coastal waters. Well, of course, you have watersheds, and everything that goes on upstream impacts the coastal waters. It's called runoff and land management. And I am nervous about this because they will start at the ocean, but the goal is inland, and this is already being set up in the Interior Department as a federal control over all water courses in the United States. Continuing with the article, have you ever heard of CMSP? We hadn't either until we read an ESPN Outdoors piece by Robert Montgomery. So we did some research and found out, and what we found scares us to the point we've considered selling our boat and wonder if we're going to have to get rid of our fishing gear. We suspect the beer companies are equally uneasy about what lies in store. Seems that President Obama has appointed a group called the Ocean Policy Task Force. The original idea was to plan federal policy related to ocean fishing. but on December 14, 2009, the task force issued its interim report entitled, quote, Interim Framework for Effective Coastal Marine Spatial Planning. You can find on page 5 what this framework will affect. The oceans, our coasts, and the Great Lakes are home to support and support myriad important human uses. CMSP, the Coastal Marine Spatial Policy, provides an effective process to better manage a range of social, economic, and cultural uses, including aquaculture, which is fish, shellfish, and seaweed farming, commercial and transportation, that is cargo, cruise ships, tankers, and ferries, commercial fishing, environmental conservation, including marine sanctuaries, reserves, national parks, and wildlife refuges, marine heritage and archaeology, mining, sand and gravel, oil and gas exploration and development, ports and harbors, recreational fishing, renewable energy, including wind, wave, tidal, current, and thermal, other recreation, boating, beach access, swimming, nature and whale watching and diving, scientific research and exploration, security, emergency response, and military readiness and activities, tourism, traditional hunting, fishing, and gathering. Oh, good, they threw the tribes in there. Did they miss anything? Did you pick up on commercial fishing and recreational fishing? Anybody out there see federal fishing licenses coming? There are already fishing licenses and fines and so forth already. If you can think that anything in this, quote, framework would not include, of anything this, if you can think of anything that this framework would not include, then check out the box on page 36 of this report and see if there is anything you can think of that would not be included. Don't overlook the flood prevention if you live in one of our CAMA counties. What this means is every aspect of land use control, everything, every aspect of fishing, including people who fish for subsistence, can be impacted by all of this. The idea is that another federal bureaucracy would be created by presidential executive order that would implement a policy of comprehensive spatial planning of the nation's territorial waters offshore. But on page 9 of the report, the geographic scope would include inland bays and estuaries in both coastal and Great Lakes settings. Inclusion of inland bays and estuaries is essential because of the significance of ecological, social, and economic linkages between these areas with offshore areas. Additional inland areas may be included in the planning area as the regional planning bodies described in Section 9 below seem appropriate or deem appropriate. Regardless, consideration of inland activities would be necessary to account for the significant interaction between the upstream activities and ocean, coastal, and Great Lakes uses in ecosystem health. Likewise, consideration should also be given to activities occurring beyond this zone that may influence resources or activities within this zone. In another section, we talk about meshing the CMSP with existing state, regional, and local planning agencies. Presumably, for North Carolina, that would include the Coastal Resources Commission, Wildlife Resources Commission, Marine Fisheries Commission, and the Army Corps of Engineers. Some readers will remember a few years ago, the Congress passed a law giving the Army Corps of Engineers control over navigable waters. Navigable waters ended up being called, quote, blue line streams. One such, quote, blue line stream is the ditch behind the Hiram Masonic Lodge on 5th Street in downtown Washington. The ditch got its is not navigable even for a duck most days, yet the federal government controls what can be done with the ditch. If that's not enough reason to scare the daylights out of you, we give up. The Beaufort Observer asked Representative Walter B. Jones, Jr. for his comment on this matter, and here's what Mr. Jones had to say. I am very concerned about the administration's proposal for marine spatial planning, particularly its potential impact on commercial and recreational fishing. Along with the government-run healthcare at cap and trade, this appears to be another front in the administration's systematic effort to expand the size and scope of federal government control. And that is something I strongly oppose. No one in the chat room yet, no one on the line. Let me talk about this federal takeover of fisheries article. It is found at the Beaufort Observer .net, and it's an article today. But I think not only is this a distraction, of course, because it begins to attack our livelihoods, and that is certainly a distraction. You're not going to go off on a marsh when you're worried about losing your boat or your fishing gear or your license or essentially your food and income. Same with anyone else who even fishes off a pier. You're not going to want to get arrested by anyone and so forth. So this is clearly a distraction because it gets at our livelihood. And yes, all these other things are going on as well, but I think this is even more insidious because I think this relates to Agenda 21 of the United Nations. As many of the large-scale environmental efforts that are going on in the country, the big Columbia Basin plateau planning area, or these other areas, these corridors of land. You recall just, I think just last week or perhaps earlier this week, there was going to be the federal government had planned to buy 57 million acres or take 57 million acres in four western states, I believe, to try to get at some wildlife corridor or some energy corridor. But clearly the wildlife angle will be used to try to make this seem like it's an environmental piece. But overall, Agenda 21, which is a UN program, which essentially will reduce or eliminate national boundaries, the boundaries of countries, the sovereignty of countries, in order to create enclaves and preserves and so forth and so on. This is part of that. So it's very sneaky. I know some of these people who are doing this right now. I used to work for the federal government, and it's quite interesting to see this going on because, by and large, these are very good scientists and, you know, very good people who are working on the local level, and they seem to be doing the right thing and convinced they're doing the right thing and certainly try to accommodate economics. By and large, they're being used by a bigger structure. This is Obama trying to break down our sovereignty. And listen, the Obama supporters out there, you better get a grip here because it's this is really serious. The guy is not eligible. He should be out right now under the 25th Amendment. No time for impeachment. He's not a real president. He doesn't deserve impeachment. But you folks who are having second thoughts about this and feel guilty, please don't stay in your guilt. Help us get our country back. This is it for our people. And those of you out there who are false patriots who want to make a buck on liberty, I encourage you to get over it because there is no time for that either. We are all leaders right now. If our founders were before us, they'd grab every one of us right now by the scruff of the neck and throw us out. Start working. We're lucky we have boots now. They didn't. In any case, this federal fisheries control, federal takeover, watch this. Watch the other land grabs that are going on right now. They are certainly going to try to get at our economy because and our livelihood because that is the thing that creates fear and uncertainty and makes us basically hope the government will back off and just leave us alone. But essentially, it's a very dangerous position to be in because they are robbing us of our essentially any free time we might have to try to take our country back. So let me go there. Good evening, guest. Thank you for checking in here. All right, now let me move very quickly right now to the Patriot Papers. My friend KJ Kaufman writes for a number of blogs, and she has her own blog called Constitutional Governance. And it's an excellent blog where she writes a number of issues. And we have been conversing and talking over a while about the need to put out another document similar to the Federalist Papers, although there's a new Federalist paper that's coming out right now, a new Federalist Papers book that's coming out. The authors of that already have a few things going. KJ and I talked about, let's get something else out, something called the Patriot Papers. The idea is to really talk about our founding governance, our founding government, like Thomas Paine did in Common Sense. His pamphlet went everywhere because it made such sense. It was what turned people, not the elegant words of the Declaration of Independence, not the elegance of all the Virginia declarations and all the other states. It was really Tom Paine's just plain, simple common sense. And so what we wanted to do was to write a series of papers on this. And let me see, when was this published? January 24th. Okay, so let me just check one second. I'm sorry, listeners, I'm doing all of this by myself here. But let's start with, it would be nice if we could start with Federalist Paper number one, but I think I'm going to start with number three. So let me start with my write-up on, which is under drcaseview.wordpress.com. On Federalism and Freedom, Patriots Paper number three, there is no limit to the numbers we want to write. If any of you are interested in contributing, you can come to my blog and see if you'd like to write one or to KJ's blog and so forth. But take a look at what we have. This is number three. It's designed to be like one paper, simple, and here we go. On Federalism and Freedom, the historical tension in our nation between freedom and a strong central government forms the basis for the Patriot Paper number three. Quote, yes, we did produce a near-perfect republic, but will they keep it, or will they, in enjoyment of plenty, lose the memory of freedom? Material abundance without character is the path of destruction. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and will never be. If we are to guard against ignorance and remain free, it is the responsibility of every American to be informed. This was Thomas Jefferson in letters to John Adams and Colonel Charles Clancy. Going back here again. The power of an educated citizenry in their respective states was central to assuring the role of the people as equal to, excuse me, or greater than the servant federal government. And this tension would ultimately be manifested in the question of whether or not to develop a central bank. The resumption of this appropriate balance in the Constitution lies in the morality and principles of leadership. How do we ascertain those characteristics today? Now let me go ahead and read for you Patriot Papers number three. I will read that quote again. This is by KJ Kaufman, published January 20th. Yes, we did produce a near-perfect republic. But will they keep it? Or will they, in the enjoyment of plenty, lose the memory of freedom? Material abundance without character is the path of destruction. If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If we are to guard against ignorance and remain free, it is the responsibility of every American to be informed. Continuing a theme from the paper on our first president, it is the character of the people that will be reflected in the leaders we choose. If our government is corrupt today, we have no one to blame but ourselves, for they simply are a mirror of our own deals, ideals, our foibles, and excesses. This was also true at the time of our revolution, in that our founders took up arms against the excesses of a tyrannical monarchy. When our country was formed, it represented the ideals of government that our founders brought forth through their scholarly learning and actual experience, as well as their courage. How many among us would risk our lives and our fortunes to ensure that their children lived a better America than the one in which we were born? How many of us are willing to make the tough choices today to ensure a better path for our futures? How many of us know that the republic for which this nation was founded and is an unparalleled leap in human freedom is at great risk today? How many of you will stand up and vow to change the course and reestablish constitutional governance? When our government was founded, not all agreed on how they should proceed, but most erred on the side of less government and the preservation of individual freedom than even that which they finally settled upon. The politicians and statesmen of the time realized that they knew, the politicians and statesmen of the time realized the limitations of the Articles of Confederation in protecting the state against foreign enemies. They knew that a federal system must be put in place to unite the states and form a nation that was capable of negotiating with foreign countries as well as protecting itself from other nations. But it was also strongly held that the federal system must be limited. Many believe it was only through providence that the founders were successful. Not unlike today, as soon as the Constitution was ratified, federal power immediately began to expand its influence. It is difficult to blame the original founders because they were truly operating within an experiment. There were precedents to set, decisions to be made, and new positions to fill. To think that they wouldn't make some mistakes would be naive, but to behold what sprung forth is truly a lesson in political ideology meets reality with the freedom of the individual winning the day. As great as this victory would be, it would also be tested early and often. One such test came with President Washington's first term, in which an ever-enlarging feud between Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton had commenced. Thomas Jefferson could best be described as wholly in favor of individual freedoms, while Hamilton often thought that the people were not capable of governing themselves. Sound familiar? You might think of Thomas Jefferson as a champion of the people and states' rights, while Hamilton was the forebearer of today's elite. Transpiring from this feud was the birth of political parties. Although ideology different from the named parties today, there were definitely two camps descriptive of party politics: freedom and states' rights versus an increasingly powerful centralized government. As we can see through the lens of over 2 years of governance, the centralized government model has won out more times than it has lost. In the end, it may be this furtherance of centralized government against the original intent of the founding and the Constitution that brings us to the precarious position upon which we are perched today. And it is this very idea that we must fully examine and determine once and for all, because the government in which we choose will determine not only our futures, but the futures of many, including those beyond our borders. One item of contention between Jefferson and Hamilton had to do with American finance and banking, described by one author as follows. The center point of their dissension was Hamilton's radical fiscal policies. To Jefferson, the establishment of a national bank was simply the means of enriching a few money men, and Hamilton's other measures fell under the same censure. Jefferson saw Hamilton's financial practices as harmful to the poor and destructive to the national well-being. Hamilton, on the other hand, insisted that his policies were essential to a strong national economy. Yes, a few money men would become wealthier, but in a viable economy, so could everyone else. At this point in history, President Washington had already signed the bill passed by Congress to set up a national bank over strong objection by Madison as well as Jefferson's well-known opposition. Washington did not sign the bill without great deliberation and struggle. Both Madison and Jefferson advised that the Congress's authority to set up a national bank was wholly unconstitutional. Eventually, President Washington signed the bill thinking that since the bank's charter would expire after 20 years, it was, therefore, only a temporary measure to ensure the economic stability of the nation, thus beginning the birth of political expediency over constitutional protections that have been perpetuated to this very day. Let me just take a quick brief break here for a sip of water. I will be right back. Welcome back to the Revolution Radio. That was my old show. So right there, President Washington signed the bill thinking that since the bank's charter would expire after 20 years, it was therefore only a temporary measure to ensure the economic stability of the nation, thus beginning the birth of political expediency over constitutional protections that have been perpetuated to this very day. We must also, however, give credence to protecting the nation. The nation was in a great debt from the Revolutionary War, and the National Bank was thought a fiscal measure to alleviate this situation. This type of legislation continues in modern America, where forsaking the Constitution to empower the federal government, sometimes for the good of the nation and more times than not to its detriment. Should we really be balancing this type of legislation against constitutional protections? or should we insist on strict adherence to the Constitution? The answer to that is where our focus should be and where the bulk of these papers reside. Resulting from the diametrically opposed points of view, i.e. individual freedoms and states' rights versus centralized government, two parties took shape, originally referred to as Republicans, which were Jefferson's points of view, and Federalists, Hamilton's point of view. Of course, these were not parties as we think of them today, but they did express political philosophy and had active proponents on each side. At one point, while speaking in confidence with President Washington, Jefferson stated, quote, "Hamilton's corrupt squadron in Congress were making themselves rich while approving tax measures that would be chained about our necks for a great length of time. Hamilton was turning the nation from its safe and solid agricultural base to money speculation," Jefferson charged. "Hamilton's ultimate objective was to create a monarchy." President Washington struggled to reconcile the arguments made by his two friends and cabinet members. Washington was a deliberate and careful thinker. He thoroughly weighed the arguments in light of the United States Constitution, for he felt so bound by the document and so aware that his actions set precedent that he was wary of making any mistake in these areas of reflection, though he did in fact sign the legislation into law. President Washington was against political parties. He grew weary of these governments between two camps. He also considered such arguments in light of virtue and morality. Like Madison, Washington argued that a successful government must be based on morality. Of all the disposition and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and cherish them. A volume could not trace all their connections with private and public felicity. And let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in the exclusion of religious principle. And Washington continued by urging for the establishment of an American university. He worried that American youth were being sent to Europe to be trained in non-democratic ways of thinking. What a shame that his worries would be realized in modern America, in its own schools, financed by its own federal and state governments today. Today it is our duty to understand the underlying political philosophies in which this country was founded. We fought a war against the British to pave a new form of government, not to embrace the monarchy of the founders' time or socialism in today's Europe. We can either continue this experiment of a constitutional republic, or we can consent to the, quote, fundamental transformation, unquote, of America. It certainly seems to many of us that the only way to make a reasoned decision on the matter is to at least understand our founding and political thought in which we were based. To do any less may result in reaching the wrong conclusion. Are you willing to at least look at the history and thoughts and determine the best course for our future? Are you willing to look at the proper balance between federalism and freedom? For if you are not, then the decision has already been made for us. A very profound Federalist paper, number 3. We are in great danger right now from our government. We have strayed so far from our founding principles. I think the first quote in this issue, in this paper, is profound. They produced a near-perfect republic, but will they keep us? Will we keep it? Or, in our enjoyment of plenty, will we forget freedom? The price of liberty is eternal vigilance, Jefferson told us. Material abundance without character is the path of destruction. Who would you name out there that has any character? Someone you would really want to see elected. Even some of our favorites. Even some of our favorites. Even some of our favorites. Like Sarah Palin, for example. Who is not a Bilderberger? Who's not there? Now, ladies and gentlemen, as you can tell, and listeners, my voice didn't work out too well. I am recovering from a couple of months of being sick and with medications that didn't work. So I'm much better now. But I am, for the remainder of the show, going to shift into Paradigm Shift, Episode 2. You can catch the last episode on Blog Talk Radio and download it from my site as well. It's a terrific show, and I'm just going to let Jeff carry it all the way through, Jeff Williams. If the show ends before, or if this show, Revolution Radio, ends before the completion of that show, please catch the podcast. You'll be able to listen to the whole piece. Thank you so much, and here we go, Paradigm Shift number 2.
The Constitution for the United States of America. Article 1, Section 8 clearly defines the role of the federal government, but our founders believed in a limited federal government, which is why the 10th Amendment specifically indicates that the states and the people retain powers not enumerated in the Constitution. But the 10th Amendment may as well not even exist, based on how frequently it's ignored in Washington, D.C. It's criminal, and I think treasonous. And are we in the clear, or is there another financial event on the horizon? No one can say for sure, but with economies around the world in distress, government spending out of control, and the Fed printing fiat currency by the truckload, find out why many are turning to gold to protect their assets. My name is Jeff Williams, and it's time for a paradigm shift.
Sooner or later, you got to draw a line and stand your ground, whether anybody else does or not. That is what liberty is all about.
And now, our nation is drifting dangerously from freedom to fascism.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Those people that have a diametrically opposing point of view than yours, they will figure out the learning curve, they will mail the letters, and they will make the phone calls. They will show up in numbers, they will overwhelm you, because your butt is on the couch thinking that right about now would be a great time for somebody else to go out and fix this problem.
Great principles don't get lost once they come to light. They're right here.
There comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe, not politic, not popular, but he must do it because conscience tells him it is right.
It's a, quote, conspiracy of ideas. This is an ideological battle. Some people believe in globalism. Others of us believe in national sovereignty.
How long is it going to be before you finally resist and say no? I will not comply. Period.
Yeah, well, if you've read the Department of Homeland Security report and you're pretty sure the federal government classifies you as a right-wing nut job, I have a feeling you're going to like this program. Hi, my name is Jeff Williams, Paradigm Shift number 2. You can find us on the web, commonsensejeff.com/podcast. You can download us through iTunes, and that's probably got to really piss off Steve Jobs. If you do download us through iTunes, please make sure to leave positive feedback. But right now, let's get into the program. Joining me now is Jeffrey Bennett. He is an independent broker of precious metals with Kettle Moraine in the beautiful southwestern United States. And in the interest of full disclosure, Jeffrey is my personal broker, but there is no quid pro quo for this appearance. Jeffrey is simply the best guy I know to talk to about these issues. So, Jeffrey, let's start right here. I bought my gold from you about 18 months ago for an average of about $800 an ounce. In the last month or so, it's been over $1,200. Today, spot gold closed near $1,106. Now, my friends hear those numbers and slap me on the back and offer me congratulations for my shrewd investment. They think I must be so happy about my investments, and I look them in the face and say, no, actually, I'm not happy about anything. This is exactly the amount of money that I had
as it was when I invested it, you should be upset, if not panicking, because the truth is the value of your dollar has decreased by 30% in the same amount of time, and that's where I'd like to start.
It's very interesting you put it in those terms. As you know, Jeff, I've been an independent broker now for about 20 years. My corporation was founded in 1996, but professionally I've been involved with precious metals for about 20 years. The interesting thing is I will be 62 as of the week we are conducting this interview. I began to buy silver at the age of 10, gold at the age of 12. It doesn't matter. You know, gold was $35 an ounce back then. Silver was probably a dollar and some odd cents an ounce. It doesn't make a lot of difference what it was. I could do some research. But the fact of the matter is each one of those gold pieces will buy for me today, over a half a century later, exactly what it bought for me back then. We can go back into history 100 years, 1,000 years, 5,000 years, and we find that that equation always maintains. And yet it takes so many more dollars to buy that automobile or that loaf of bread or a gallon of milk, et cetera, that it did when I was a kid. And it's one of the simplest ways, but people don't understand it. You and I discussed this some years ago when people call up and say, well, what did gold do today? What did gold close at today? My honest question is, what do you care? The question you should be asking is, what did the dollar do today? What did the dollar close at today? And it's but we're not taught to think this way, Jeff. I think we're taught to be amongst the dumbest people on the face of the earth when it comes to economic issues. We've watched the stock market roar back. They've gained some 52-odd% of their losses over the last year from what they'd incurred several years ago, and everybody's all excited about it. You know what? I don't care if your IRA and 401k, your retirement, your pension fund, or your savings account has come roaring back, and it's back up to $10,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 right where it was 3 years ago. With this continued inflationary factor, this ongoing printing of money that our government is doing, this massive circulation of worthless dollars, these people, even if they've broken even on paper, have lost a lot of money.
Well, that's a great place to stop and introduce a term to our listeners, which is a huge part of the problem behind the economic problems of our nation, and that is fiat currency. Jeffrey, why don't you explain the concept of fiat currency?
A fiat currency is one that has absolutely no backing of any substance whatsoever. Our gold and silver don't back our currency any longer. It's what stabilized. We didn't have massive bouts of inflation or deflation when you had something solid backing our currency.
So we're off the gold standard in 1971, and going back to something you said earlier, our currency is backed by the, quote, full faith and credit of the U.S. government. What does that even mean? How can anyone have any faith in our economic system when we clearly have no fiscal responsibility or accountability of any kind? We literally print money by the trillions. And how can that inspire anyone to invest their money in the economy of the United States of America?
Jeff, last week, the Chinese just announced they sold off $32.4 billion worth of U.S. securities. They don't want them. The Chinese are starting to bail out. When a personage such as the caliber of Barack Obama goes and meets with the Chinese and tells them what a great sound financial system we have, and they're sitting there laughing at him. Look, so many nations around the world got sucked into this real estate debacle that was developing in this country some years ago. I know where you live. You know where I live. Both of our states have been hit very, very hard with economic hardship in the real estate market. And unfortunately, when houses go from being $150,000 and all of a sudden they're worth $400,000, you know what? They were never worth $400,000. It just took a lot more dollars to buy that same house. And now they're right back down to where they were. So people have gotten kind of stuck in the middle of all this. They've lost big time. If they had just had a percentage of that money sitting in gold when that real estate market began to explode in 2002, they'd be at least at an even position today. That was not the case with dollars. It's not been the case with their real estate. Like I say, with the Chinese bailing out, so many other nations. I've been looking to buy some other houses or another house here recently, and I cannot tell you the number of houses that I've looked at and I found were owned by the Deutsche Bank. That's the German banking system. So they got conned into buying up a bunch of U.S. real estate paper. How happy do you think the German banking system is with us right now, or the French banking system, or the British, or anything else? Our real estate bubble sucked the rest of the world in. Now they're all paying for it. You think Greece wasn't involved? Of course they were.
Well, let's get back to gold. You know, gold is a hedge against inflation. It's a way to protect your dollar and the value of what you already have. It's not a great investment per se. But when it comes to buying gold, some people make a mistake. You know, you got to make sure that you're buying a tangible product, you know, bullion, and not just paper. Why don't you take a minute and explain that concept?
Paper would mean an ETF, an electronic trading fund, or a shares in a gold scenario. Don't contact some firm and say, okay, I want to buy $10,000 or $20,000 or $5,000 or $50,000 worth of gold and have them send you an IOU. Jeff, what most people in this country don't realize is when they call their broker right now and order 500 shares of stock, they almost never, unless they demand it, ever even get possession of that stock certificate. When you're going to buy gold or silver, you take physical possession of it. You do not store it in a safety deposit box in a bank, even though you think it's more safe. One spouse or another passes away, representatives of the Homeland Security get to stand over your shoulder and take a peek at what's in that box, why the surviving spouse or family member is going through that box. They then get to catalog it down, bang, taxola. You buy gold and silver, it is a private mechanism that is designed to help you insure yourself against complete financial collapse. Gold is the ultimate protector. It's simple. It's an insurance policy. Against what? Against the collapse and the stupidity and the ignorance and greed of governments. I don't know any other way to put it.
Now, when I bought my gold, I had a variety of motivating reasons, one of which is that if the proverbial economic end of the world as we know it occurred, then I had a way to take care of my family, at least for a period of time. And for me, that meant fractional size coins, because if you've got a 1 ounce gold coin and it's worth, you know, all this money, it's difficult to make change for that. I mean, you can take it to the store, you can get what you need, but how do you take back, you know, the change? So in my case, that meant half ounce and quarter ounce coins, although they even make them smaller. At the time, though, fractionals were extremely difficult to find. What is the gold market right now? If I had money to spend, or if, you know, one of the listeners calls you up and wants to buy gold coins, what is that market like? Is there gold to buy?
Market's not bad right now. There are silver's actually a little tougher to get than gold right now. Amongst the biggest problems that I've had with my suppliers, some of whom I've had relations with for 18, 19 years now, is that some of them have just gotten stupidly stupid. They won't ship less than 500 ounces of silver. They won't ship less than 10 ounces of gold. But that's not always the case. I have a number of other sources I can go to for smaller quantity. I like fractional for the same reason you do. Fractional could mean American Eagles or Canadian Maple Leaf, 10th quarter, half ounce sizes. If a guy comes to me with $50,000, yes, I'm going to say let's get some 1 ounce pieces. But let's also get some of the halves and quarters and tenths. Obviously, you know my feeling about silver. I believe that at least 20% of one's physical holding needs to be in silver. Why? Because that's going to be your tank of gas and bag of grocery money. Some of your audience is going to say, what in the heck is he talking about? You take a gas and bag of groceries. I'll tell you exactly what I'm talking about. What happened in North Korea in December when they woke up one morning and found out that their currency had been completely wiped out. They had a maximum that they were able to convert into the new currency. That maximum was the equivalent of $40 U.S. People out there sitting there with $200,000 and $300,000 and $400,000, the equivalency thereof. The rest of it was gone with the wind. It was lost. There has never been a time in history when gold and silver has gone to zero. There never will be. But every single currency, once again, your term, fiat currency, everyone that has ever existed has gone to zero in value, been wiped out, been replaced with a new currency. And it's usually at a great loss, a 10-to-1, 100-to-1 exchange, in some cases much greater than that.
You know, a piece of advice that you gave me back in the day was to understand that spot gold was not what I was going to be paying for my gold coins. If I were to go out today, if gold closed at, say, 11:06, like it did tonight, if I were to buy a 1 ounce Eagle, I would be paying more than that. I'd be paying spot plus an additional premium. Likewise, you got to always make sure to do the math and calculate those premiums out to the ounce. For example, if I buy a 1 ounce coin and the premium is $100, and it's actually going to be much more than that, but let's just say for the sake of argument, $100, and then I price out quarter ounce coins and the premium per coin is only $50, you know, to the inexperienced buyer, that may sound like a better deal, but you know what you got to do is you got to take that quarter ounce and multiply that by 4, which now means you're paying $200 per ounce, which is double the premium, so not such a hot deal. But as a rule, the premiums for fractionals are always more.
It will be, and allow me to say this, because this is the biggest misconception when it comes to precious metals purchases. Somebody says, well, gee, gold's 1108. How come I've got to pay $1,200 an ounce? Or in some cases, if you came to me and said you wanted to buy 1/10 ounce pieces in American Eagle, I'll bet you, and I'm not even looking right now, I'm going to throw a dart and assume that it would probably come out to be somewhere in the $1,600 an ounce range. The smallest pieces are in the highest demand, and therefore they bring the biggest premiums. But the reason you cannot buy physical gold at spot, unless your next-door neighbor is hard up for cash. But you can't do it at a coin shop, a pawn shop. You can't come to any reputable brokerage firm in the nation and buy gold at spot, because that's what it's theoretically used, that's what it's worth in the ground. It has not been mined or fabricated yet. It has not been refined. Those are figures that are used to sell basically 400-ounce gold bars delivered at the NYMEX or the COMEX in New York or Chicago. But that's also a figure that's used for mining companies to borrow against future production. It's not the value of the real goods. The best example, I know I shared this one with you early on. You go to a grocery store, are you going to go argue with the grocer, why do I have to pay $2.50 for a half gallon of orange juice? I can pick the oranges off the tree for cheaper than that. And that's the best argument. You cannot buy orange juice or bread for what the cost of the raw materials are. And it's the same exact answer with gold or an automobile or anything else you buy. I've always done my best to get my clients the greatest amount of gold for the least amount of money. My attitude, this is your money. It's not my money.
Jeffrey, let me ask you this. And I realize that you don't have a crystal ball, and some people might see you as being biased because, you know, of what you sell. But let me ask this. Do you think that we are headed for an economic disaster?
I don't know how we can avoid it. We're making the same mistakes that so many other nations have made, and even we're talking recent history. We are following the same pathway as Argentina. Argentina, in the last 20 years, has gone through major currency debacles 2 to 3 times. They just did something in 2008, by the way, which established... It was almost a guinea pig. It has established a direction that other nations are beginning to seriously look at. Argentina took control of everyone's pension fund. In our nation, we would call them IRAs, 401ks, things of that nature. They took control of everyone's. They basically gave them an IOU and said, okay, when it comes to retirement age, we'll pay you a stipend every month. Well, isn't that exactly what we were told with Social Security? Social Security was supposed to be voluntary. Social Security has been broke for years. They've borrowed or stolen every dime out of Social Security. The money that's being paid in there right now today is going to pay for Social Security for people my mother's age in their 70s and 80s. How much longer can we continue on? It's a matter of how long they can keep this bubble or keep the con game going on. How many times I'll be doing my radio program at night, and I'll take a look at headlines over here that say, oh, my God, consumer confidence is down. But then over here it says, oh, there's been fewer foreclosures this month, so things must be getting better. This is all on the same day. We're getting ready to go through the second round of foreclosures. Haven't even touched the commercial yet. At some point in time, it's all got to implode.
You know, personally, I think one of the great unspoken truths about buying gold, I'll take this for example. Typical weekday morning news cycle for any week in America. On half the days, they're telling you that the crisis is over. It's done. We're out of it. It's great. It's happy, you know. And then the other half of the days are like, consumer confidence is an all-time low. Layoffs are at an all-time high. So, you know, we're playing this teeter-totter. You know, people are looking at the markets. People are looking at the value of the dollar. And I used to do this, and boy, it just stresses the holy living crap out of you. I don't do that anymore. You know, one thing that's great about buying gold, when you've got that in your possession, it's this intangible thing. It's called peace of mind.
Absolutely. No two ways about it.
And I thank you for my peace of mind, sir.
You are welcome, my friend. It's always a pleasure. And hopefully we're able to get some of these thoughts initially into some of your listeners' minds. And that's literally what it is. I mean, I certainly invite people to come visit my website if they'd care to talk or call me for just general questions and consultation. Even if they choose not to buy from me, I guarantee you they will walk away with enough knowledge guaranteed that they will not get burned by someone unscrupulous punk out there. And there's an awful lot of them. Look, turn on the nightly news. I don't care. You turn on Glenn Beck, you turn on Fox, you turn on CNN. Some of the biggest gold brokerage firms in the country are advertising on those programs in 45 minutes, 3 or 4 different companies. You call those companies, bing, you're on a call list. They're going to try to sell you rarities and certified and overpriced proof gold pieces. That's great if you got a lot of money and you want to be a coin collector. Most of my clients just want to survive whatever is coming, and that's the major difference. They can certainly go visit FlyingEagleGold.com. Contact information is there. There's some other links. It's not really a sales website. There's good information there. If they go to the section called Why Gold, just read the five lousy columns I've got posted there. And that's it. Five columns. And I've done that for a reason. I'm sorry, it's six. I don't want to get caught about lying. One's called The Legend of Jacques Dupré, Gold and Economic Freedom, which, by the way, was a speech given by Alan Greenspan in 1966, wherein he said, in the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. Those are the words of Alan Greenspan. And if I can assist your listeners beyond that, all the information on how they can reach me is there.
All right. Thank you, Jeffrey. Jeffrey Bennett, he is the owner of Kettle Moraine, and you can find him online at FlyingEagleGold.com. Again, he is my broker, full disclosure. No quid pro quo here. He is just the best at what he does, and you know I trust him, and I would encourage you, if you're in the market for some gold, to give him a call. If you need to find the links to either Flying Eagle Gold or GoldenIRA.net or the articles that we talked about earlier, hit the show notes, commonsensejeff.com/podcast. It's all there, so make sure to check it out. Coming up next, if the Founding Fathers could see the federal government today, I think the three-letter acronym that might come to mind for them is WTF. And why? Because the federal government ignores the Constitution, the very Constitution that was designed to constrain the size of government, including but not limited to the 10th Amendment. We're going to deal with that issue coming up next, right here on Paradigm Shift. Back to Paradigm Shift. I'm Jeff Williams. Thanks for subscribing, thanks for downloading, and thanks for listening. If you're trying to get in touch with us, gosh, there's a lot of ways to do that, and you're going to notice a theme here, so pay attention. Our website, commonsensejeff.com. You can reach us on Twitter, commonsensejeff. On Skype, Common Sense Jeff. Email me at commonsensejeff.com. And if you're completely just not into doing anything, you know, high tech, pick up the phone. This is our listener feedback line, 509-850-3355. That's 509-850-3355. No, it doesn't make you a technological retard to use that. It's just another way of doing business. Also, obviously, you know, we are recording the calls, so if you say something exceptionally intelligent or, on the flip side, something exceptionally stupid, you can pretty much expect to find yourself on a future podcast. The 10th Amendment to the Constitution reads as follows. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. Sounds pretty simple to me. Not so much to other folks. Thank goodness we've got Gary Wood from the 10thAmendmentCenter.com organization to join us today and explain it all to us. Gary, how are you today?
Oh, any better. I couldn't stand it. I appreciate you having us on today.
Well, I think this has been a movement that has been gaining some speed for some time, but last year, April 9th, 2009, Austin, Texas, there was a press conference. And at that press conference, Rick Perry spoke, but also the author of a bill called HCR 50, Representative Brandon Creighton, spoke and talked about states' rights on the national stage, really for the what I thought was one of the first huge events. And this is what he had to say.
This HCR 50 effort began over a year ago after visiting with State Representative Charles Key from Oklahoma on the frustrations involved with Washington. It was obvious to me that many Americans are frustrated with Washington and desperately want their states to address this frustration. If there is any message to take from this legislative session, I would hope that it would be this. Texans standing together for our great state will not stand idle for the continued expansion and overreaching of the federal government into very important policy and budgetary issues that clearly should be left for Texas to resolve. And we're not alone in this effort. When we filed HCR 50 just a few short weeks ago, only a handful of states were engaged. Today, there are over 30 states in the process of ratifying or considering a similar measure, reemphasizing the federal Congress our well-established 10th Amendment right. And I wish the problem was limited to unfunded federal mandates, but it's clear to me that many Texans feel more remote and disenfranchised from government at every level because the federal government has become more expansive and more captive to special interests than ever before.
So Representative Creighton, at that point, 30 states, this is almost a year ago, where are we now?
Well, there's still, there's somewhere, I know the numbers, it changes and fluctuates, we're right around 34, 35 states that have some form of state-level legislation going on, whether that is a resolution, whether that is firearms, medical marijuana, all sorts of different legislation is out there from different states. Some states are only doing onesies, twosies. Here in Utah, we've got, over 13 different bills that address some form of 10th Amendment powers pushback, if you will.
Now, a lot of the commonalities that I've seen and have been disappointed with a lot of these bills is that there are no teeth. They are, you know, it's a statement, you know, we're going to get together, hold hands, we're going to say that we're all in favor of states' rights, but when it comes down to it, there is nothing behind them and there is no action taken. Now, Utah is a little bit of a different story from my understanding.
Well, we've got, and not only Utah, I mean, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, Tennessee, more and more states are bringing out teeth in some of the legislative bills. The resolutions, it's true enough, a resolution is a real nice statement. And here, what I see the benefit of resolutions are twofold. One, it's education. It's an opportunity to raise the issue so people that otherwise would ignore it or who have misunderstood it will pause long enough to get educated on it. The second benefit of a resolution without teeth is you'll see a lot of legislators on both sides of the aisle more than willing to sign on to a resolution. Where are they when the teeth come out in legislation? Are they still there or not?
Right. And I think, you know, with Montana, with the Firearms Freedom Act, yeah, I think, you know, that's proven to be unsuccessful as far as battling the federal government. But I think that it woke a lot of people up. And, you know, is it Wyoming right now that's talking about holding all federal taxes in escrow and not sending that money?
Yeah, you've got it talked about there. You've got it talked about and kicked around in Washington. We're kicking it around here. So more and more. And that's really, you know, that's where the education comes in. If you really are going to stand for 10th Amendment powers and duty, and I'll use those words instead of the states' rights, because that's a whole different issue. But if you get around the whole idea, are you then willing to stand behind a stop of taking the federal flow of dollars and returning to the proper flow of funding for any program? That's going to be the hard part for citizens who think they're for the 10th Amendment until the dollar stops.
Right. Well, to me, this seems like kind of a no-brainer because, I mean, the federal dollars will stop, but if they never go to the federal government in the first place, I mean, I think it's pretty much a proven fact that anytime you run money through the federal system, all that happens is programs become less efficient and more expensive.
That's right.
So from an efficiency standpoint, I love it. But from a constitutional standpoint, Article 1, Section 8 clearly defines what the federal government is supposed to do. And the way I read the Constitution, like about 80% of what the federal government does, they have no business doing in the first place.
Well, exactly. And that's due to a lot of the poor precedents that have been set surrounding what they call the clauses, and those are your supremacy clause, your commerce clause, your contract clause, your due process clause. All of these have been poorly set Supreme Court precedents. And sadly, the reason it's happened is because states did not fulfill their check and balance duty. Article 1, Sections 8, 9, and 10 clearly laid out the civil liberty give and take between the federal and state levels. And the goal of the founders was to create a system of federalism that would allow each level to do what it was competent to do. Now, the federal government, they felt those 17 enumerated powers were all that they needed at the federal level and all that it would be able to do competently and in good light. And as long as the states held their check and balance duty to those and ensured that the government federal level stayed within them, then everything would operate smoothly. Sadly, that altered significantly rather quickly in history and really in high press over the last century.
Well, opponents to this movement, one of the first things they'll say is, well, you know, the founders, there's no way that they could have envisioned something like, oh, I don't know, a space program and things of that nature. So how do you account for that? And my answer to that argument is very simple. It's called amend the Constitution.
Yeah, and under Article 5, you had a couple of different opportunities for amendment, for quality amendments that were necessary. Sadly, in our history, we tend to initially we amended the Constitution to try and solve a short-term problem without looking at the long-term ripple effects. Nowadays, you know, back in 1972, Henry Kissinger said, you know, the illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes us a while. Now the unconstitutional takes them no time at all. The idea that the Constitution is a living document really started the institutionalization of it, started through Woodrow Wilson's books, the Constitutional Government in 1908, and even before that, the Congressional Government in the early 1880s, to give this notion of a living document. What people have to understand was the idea was not that the Constitution would stay in sync with today's or the modern form principles, but that the modern day era would be controlled by the foundational principles. How would you like to play a game of football with a living rule book? Or how would you like to sit down at a poker table with a bunch of people who said, okay, we're going to play with living rules here tonight?
Right. Yeah, I, there is no such thing as a living rule book. It's a complete oxymoron. But speaking of morons, when you have these arguments, I mean, if you look at what we just discussed,
right.
Article 1, Section 8, and the 10th Amendment, mm-hmm. it's pretty cut and dry. And
yes.
And what I find when I get into arguments with liberals, especially with liberals, is you have the discussion in the debate to a certain point, and when they can no longer argue based on logic, they start calling names.
Right.
And this is a clip from the Rachel Maddow show. This is a gentleman by the name of Mike Lux. He's with OpenLeft.com, and this was their discussion about 10th Amendment issues.
In terms of trying, I think that states' rights, and you're right that it does surface in conservatism over time and time again, but what we're seeing right now, I'm trying to tie together the different surprising and radical seeming things that we're hearing from conservatives mm-hmm. right now. It's secession, it's this 10th Amendment stuff, it is the birther thing, the idea that the
yeah.
president is not legitimately the president, and it's also a sort of a form of tactical extremism and sort of disrespect mm-hmm. toward federal authority. If there's a fundamental belief that secession is a good idea, the sort of extremism around states' rights, is there a connection between that and these other things? A basic idea that the federal government is an illegitimate source of authority right now.
The folks who are pushing this idea, their vision of America is a vision where it's controlled by the old time, white people, white men, wealthy people. I mean, that was John C. Calhoun's vision of America. He didn't believe in democracy. He thought Jefferson's idea of equality was a terrible idea, and that's what these Republicans think of. And so when they see when they see a black man as president of the United States, when they see immigrants coming into this country, they don't think of that as America anymore. It's like the country's been taken away from them, and it makes them prone toward this kind of violence.
Okay, so I learned a couple things from this wonderfully enlightening sound clip from the Rachel Maddow Show.
Uh-huh.
First off, actually, expecting the government to follow the Constitution is a radical thing.
Right.
And second, Gary, you're nothing more than a racist hater Republican. I didn't know that.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? You know, here's the funny thing. I didn't know that either.
Well.
Although he is generalizing Calhoun's stance and the whole idea of what this movement is, it's all surrounded around secessionism and white rule and all these other things. Sadly, that's the imperfect connection with the 10th Amendment and the whole notion of states' rights. And that's why it's really important we start. And even the legislation out there, a lot of the resolutions call it states' rights resolutions. The bottom line is states don't have rights. People have rights.
I was thinking that exact thing when she said, you know, that we were talking about the illegitimate power that was derived from the federal government. The federal government doesn't have any power. The power comes from the people.
Well, government is power in its own sense, but the power is from the people, and it's what the people give it. And states' power, federal power, are there based on the consent of the governed. And that's why the consent of the governed said, Article 1, Section 8, these are the enumerated powers. These are the civil liberties we need you to watch out for through our representative forms, representing both state and people interests. That's a whole other discussion. The state's powers are going to be very, very wide, very long, very, very large. And it's all going to check and balance to control it so that we can watch out for factional interactions and things. Some of the things that they mentioned in that little clip that are just totally inaccurate with the 10th Amendment movements and the people behind the 10th Amendment and the 10th Amendment Center, one, they talk about, you know, it's just all about secession. They talk about how we're anti-government and how we're saying the federal government's just illegitimate, all of which is wrong. One, I don't want secession. I want my country back. I'm not leaving it. I'm taking it back over. Constitutionally, the states' rights movement that they try and connect it to, that was surrounding the Civil War efforts and the secessionist efforts and things of that nature. But what we want has nothing to do with that. What we want is a return much further back to 1787, 1789, the principles of 1798. And that is a proper separation of powers. As John Locke started to talk about and as Montesquieu really it brought to light, the key to a republic's survival is a very careful separation of powers, with the lowest level of government being able to handle what it's most competent to handle. Where I can more competently handle through personal responsibility, and that gets into the Ninth Amendment, what happens with my life and my family. What's beyond that in our neighborhoods and our towns, the competency at that level is a check and balance on anything a county shouldn't be doing. Everything a county needs to be doing competently is a check and balance against things that the state should be and should not be doing. And the Constitution set up merely what the states realized because of the weakness of the Articles of Confederation, that they did need a federal or general government to control those limited powers under the Article 1, Section 8 definition. And so it isn't that we are anti-government at all. We are for governing. Governing is required in a society, a social order. I mean, we have our natural, commercial, and governing gears that are necessary for society to prosper. So we're not anti-government. We are for well-defined, competent government. To get competent government, it has to be the lowest level.
So in a nutshell, you know, any successful game plan is basically comprised of three elements. Number one, you know where you've been. Number two, you know where you're going. And number three, you know how to get there. So when it comes to issues of states' rights and the 10th Amendment, where do you go from here? Where do we go from here?
Where do we go from there? We continue the ultimate fight of educating and moving proper forward the educated candidates and legislators at the state levels who will understand federalism and start fulfilling their duty. State's duty is to tell the federal government when it's wrong, it's wrong. You know, a lot of people like to get mixed up in the supremacy clause, thinking that the federal government is supreme, period, the end. A federal law is in line with the Constitution. If it's a part of their enumerated powers, if it's within their realm of competency, then it is supreme. If it doesn't meet those, then it's not. State law becomes supreme. And that is something that state legislators need to understand and the federal government needs to be reminded of. So we continue our march towards trying to get the federal government back in its enumerated box and out of the lives of everything we're doing.
Gary Wood. He's with the 10thAmendmentCenter.com. Gary, thank you very much for joining us and laying the groundwork for what I'm sure will be an extended conversation here on Paradigm Shift.
Thank you very much for having us, Jeff, and we encourage people to get over to the 10thAmendmentCenter.com, look over the talking points, and gain some educated knowledge so you can recognize the lies of the liberals and also the true efforts of the movement to restore constitutional order in government.
When we come back, some more information about this podcast we didn't get into episode one, my thoughts and your thoughts with listener calls, and who knows what else. Just please, don't hit the delete button just yet. You are listening to Paradigm Shift. Welcome back to Paradigm Shift. I'm Jeff Williams. Now, obviously, if you're listening, you know how to download a podcast, right? Well, I want to make sure that you're doing another thing with these podcasts, and that is subscribing to them. You can subscribe either in iTunes or the RSS aggregator of your choice. You can find those links on our website at commonsensejeff.com/podcast. But by subscribing to the program, you get the content pushed to you. You don't have to worry about going out every so often and downloading episodes. It gives us the ability to do, for example, a special report like we have coming up soon that will just automatically come into the program of your choice and make it seamless. So while you're, you know, playing with the kids or, you know, doing homework or sleeping or, you know, whatever it is that you do in your spare time, your computer can be downloading the programs as they become available. We also have a newsletters link on the website, Common Sense Jeff. Now, technically, we have yet to send out a newsletter, and this is not going to be one of these things where you sign up and you get spammed or just have so much crap coming in from us that you just automatically unsubscribe or wish that you'd never seen it before. But we would like the opportunity to get in touch with you on occasion. And so if you could do that, that'd be great. CommonSenseJeff.com is the website. And again, just look for that newsletters link. We do have a Skype address if you use Skype and want to contact us at any time for any reason. That address is Common Sense Jeff, and you can also reach us by telephone. That number is 509-850-3355, 509-850-3355, and that is our listener comment line. You can leave us a message at any time, and we've got a couple now, so let's take a listen.
This is Sarah from Ohio. Just wanted to say I appreciated the first podcast that you put out, and I really like the fact that you're exploring the idea of being nudged in different directions. I think it's really important for people to be aware that the threats we face are not going to be bold and in our face. Have a great day. Bye.
Thanks for the voicemail, Sarah. You know, you're absolutely right. A lot of the threats that our nation faces from progressivism are of the nudge variety, but to be completely honest with you, that's not necessarily what we're going to be covering on this program. Just even the release schedule is not real conducive to doing current event stuff because things change so fast, and yet right now, I mean, we're doing this bi-weekly, maybe at some point in the future weekly. Even that is not really going to lend itself to that kind of topicality. Additionally, there are big names out there with a lot more credibility and experience than I doing this sort of thing. They'll be better suited to expose progressivism in both the Democrat and Republican parties than I ever will be, and it's important to stay focused in on that stuff. But when I'm talking about, you know, nudging people, I'm actually talking about it on our side of things. We have a lot of information here to get out. And I think that if we just open the floodgates and let this spill over our listeners, it would be completely overwhelming. And not only that, but, you know, when you build a house, you don't start putting up walls before you put up a foundation. I'm hoping that what this program can do is build that foundation. For example, we look at the 10th Amendment today. We've been having this health care debate in Washington, D.C. now for over a year. Once I became more familiar with the Constitution, the whole thing is a moot point. No one has ever answered the question, is this constitutional? One person asked Nancy Pelosi, this is what she said.
Where specifically does the Constitution grant Congress the authority to enact an individual health insurance mandate?
Use here is Are you serious?
So you can see the lip service that our politicians pay to the Constitution. But if we start thinking about these things seriously and holding our politicians accountable to the same standards that we're held accountable to, in other words, this is the law, you don't ignore it, you don't break it, things change. And that's also, you know, tied directly into the name of this program, Paradigm Shift. We want to go through this process of looking at some of these different issues from a foundational constitutional perspective, and then encourage your own critical thinking. And critical thinking is one of the things that we really do encourage so much. I mean, people have tuned out to politics. They've done it for 50, 60, 70 years. There's other things that are more important and more exciting and more fulfilling going on. But the problem is when we disconnect from it, that's when the bad stuff happens. And, you know, this is not a problem that happened overnight. Now, a lot of people are waking up and feeling, you know, this sense of urgency now, and it's completely understandable, and I'm right there with you. But, you know, I am not the guy that is going to be here for some kind of a strange call to authority. I am not that guy. I do not have that kind of credibility or experience. I'm just an average guy that's got a particular skill set that I believe would be successful in getting out some of this message. That's what this podcast is about. And so, you know, as we move forward with our own nudge and trying to move you through this process of understanding things from a more constitutional perspective, that's our ultimate goal, and hopefully we'll have some success. And thanks for the call.
My name is Ian from Washington State. I had a question about the Articles of Freedom and the Continental Congress 2009. I know that you were heavily involved in that and have been working really hard on that. My question is, why does nobody know about it, and why is there no coverage of anything in any of the media? I mean, everybody I talk to has never heard a thing about Continental Congress or the Articles of Freedom that were drafted. So how do we get the word out and let people know what's going on? Great first episode, by the way.
Thanks, Ian. That's a great question. I was involved with Continental Congress. I was an elected delegate from Washington State, and I'm extremely proud of my involvement with Continental Congress. The first part of your question, why doesn't anybody know about it? I think that the fundraising for the event fell very far short of what they had originally planned, and you know, some cuts were made in the process. The advertising budget, the promotion budget was slashed. As far as where people can find the Articles of Freedom, you can go to my website, commonsensejeff.com. Look in the right-hand navigation at the very bottom. It's there. You can see it and download it in PDF format. In fact, I plan on going through the articles one by one with the committee chairman that produced each one of the articles on this program as we move forward. I think the Articles of Freedom are extremely important, and I would really encourage all of you to download those and read them. It's a big document. If you want to find out how the Constitution is being violated on a daily basis, that is the goal of the Articles of Freedom, to document these instances, to make you aware of them, and then not only that, but to send specific recommendations to the states and to the federal government on how to rectify that. So this is the beginning of the process, and where it goes from here will be very interesting to gauge. But, you know, it's still very much in its infancy, and this is where the groundswell of support can begin. So again, commonsensejeff.com, and it's right there in the right-hand navigation, and I'll be putting up a bunch of other stuff about my involvement with Continental Congress as well.
Where specifically does the Constitution grant Congress the authority to enact an individual health insurance mandate?
Are you serious? Are you serious?
Coming up on the next episode of Paradigm Shift, we'll be discussing the Oath Keepers. Who are they? What do they believe? And why did Bill O'Reilly throw them under the bus on Fox News? We'll also examine this concept of politicians and their special interest agendas blatantly governing against the will of the people. So make sure to subscribe via iTunes or the RSS aggregator of your choice, and we will see you then. Show notes are available at commonsensejeff.com/podcast. In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its maximum hour of danger. This is that hour. You are that generation. Now is that moment. My name is Jeff Williams, and this has been a Paradigm Shift.
Thank you, Jeff Williams. That was terrific podcast, and I hope you all follow up on the links there. We've got about 1 minute left. Sorry, no time for calls, but I did want to remind you to check out Walls in Our Mind tomorrow night, the special segment of Revolution Radio with host Terry Dodd and Red Beckman. It should be an excellent show tomorrow evening. Begins at 7 p.m. Mountain on Dr. Kate's Revolution Radio. I'd like to thank you all for coming, all of our listeners. I'd like to thank all of our soldiers and wish them God's grace and peace and protection. And I'd like to say God bless America. And we'll close out this evening with an instrumental on friendship from the Peace Baptist Church. Good evening, everyone. This is Revolution Radio.